Biking in the pandemic. A small but silver lining, the coronavirus has accelerated the shift to pedal power in Europe and the United States. The German Cycling Association, ADFC, reports that Germans across the country are spending twice as much time biking as they were before the pandemic. There is surging demand for bikes and shared bike subscriptions, and now even shortages throughout bicycle supply chain. For bike shops, it's an unprecedented boon, so much so that it requires cities to improve their biking infrastructure. In unimagined numbers, bikes are starting to squeeze out cars in our cities. This uptick in cycling has spurred 930 miles of new bike lanes in Europe, muscling aside cars on Europe's city streets. According to the European Cyclist Federation, Belgium, Denmark, and the Netherlands are pioneering fast lanes for commuters. Pop-up lanes are being used for bikes in Berlin and Paris. Rome has painted new bike lanes, in each case taking away lanes from cars. Germany is the largest bicycle market in Europe, with 1.36 million bikes sold in 2019, and now a surge in demand. That compares with 3.6 million cars sold last year. According to Bloomberg Energy News, that volume tumbled 35% in the first half of 2020. Women riders are reportedly a big factor in the biking revolution. E-bikes are too. E-bikes use an onboard battery to boost power to the drivetrain when the rider is going up a hill or just needs a rest. E-bikes have removed the sweat factor. Who wants to show up to work or a party sweaty? Many Europeans that use e-bikes see them as substitutes for their cars. They are switching to bikes and e-bikes for their commutes to improve health and fitness to save money, because they enjoy riding and for the sake of the environment. 9 in 10 Danes owns a bike. Only 4 in 10 own a car. The European Cyclist Federation states that bikes are strongly supported by European governments to cut carbon and increase the quality of their cities. European countries provide direct financial incentives for cyclists. At the end of April, France announced a 20 million euro plan to promote cycling after the end of the lockdown. The plan includes 50 euro vouchers for the repair of a bike. Italy worked on a decree for COVID recovery whereby 120 million euro was set aside for purchase subsidies covering 70% and up to 500 euro of the price of conventional muscle-powered and electric bikes. Not to be outdone, go USA! Our country's bike shops are booming too. There have been record online bike sales. One survey found that nationwide bike sales have doubled, leisure bikes up 121%, commuter bikes up 66%, e-bikes up 85%. A bike shop in Brooklyn, New York claimed sales 600% of that a year ago. Hard to find a sub-$1,000 bikes in Chicago. For Richard's Bike Mart in North Texas, sales are up 30%. It's hiring new staff for repair services. Many shops have long wait lists for bikes. A DC retailer noted its largest sales volume in 50 years of operating the shop. Hundreds of thousands of Americans are flocking to one of the most basic forms of mobility, the bike. Many are taking up cycling for the first time in 10, 20, 30 years. It's a good form of socially distanced exercise, especially now with gyms closed. Trek magazine reports that its survey of adult bikers found that 21% plan to ride more during the pandemic, and 50% say they keep it up post-pandemic. The pandemic will likely permanently transform society in many ways, and biking is one of them. This dramatic uptick is and will be changing the urban infrastructure. In April, New York City temporarily opened 100 miles of roads to pedestrians and cyclists. Oakland shut down 10% of its streets during the pandemic for cars. There's now even a bike shortage, lagging behind the PPE shortage due to tariffs on bikes from China, lower production, and fewer imports. As the benefits of biking become ingrained in our lives, our urban infrastructure will change too, with less focus on cars and more on the cycling form of active transportation. Flanagan's Ecologic, Hiking Aspen's Lost Man Loop. September 21st, 2020, Aspen, Colorado. Gorgeous fall day, the aspen leaves turning yellow and orange, painting great swaths of shimmering gold on the mountainsides, accenting rock slides and meadows. Hillsides carpeted in reds and oranges and browns, enchanted. Not sure why the drive up Independence Pass the other day made me queasy. It is scary, but I've been up and down that incredible road perhaps 100 times. I've biked to the summit 6 times. Heading up out of Aspen, there are dangerously steep drop-offs to the right. It's a narrow, winding road with traffic coming at you. Yikes! Some guy with a trailer. Every year, a car or two topples off this harrowing road. This year, a lucky lady lived after her car tumbled 500 feet down the cliff. Made it to the lower trailhead. For the Lost Man Loop, that is. We drop my rental and I jump into my brother's new Bolt. And we proceed to the upper trailhead, passing the ghost town of Independence. Hard to imagine living and mining there. Such altitude, exposed mountain slopes, avalanches of rocks and ice. The trail takes off from the final switchback, just before the road towers to the summit, arcing in a 6% grade trajectory to Independence Pass at 12,095 feet and the Continental Divide. Out of shape? No. Acclimated? Not that either. There's thin air up here. We begin to hike at 11,506 feet. We're above treeline. The trail follows a small, gurgling stream. The rocks are covered with lichen. The higher we get, the more pervasive the rocks are. No wonder they call these the Rockies. That makes the trail a bit treacherous. You want to take in all the views, but got to keep your eyes on the rocks. We pass the little lake, so peaceful, perched so high in the Rockies. A marmot pops up to check us out. For me, it's tough going. Nearly 2 hours of steady incline to Lost Man Pass at 12,810 feet. As we crest an incline, it's a Sound of Music moment. The hills are alive. The magnificence of the Rockies is omnipresent. Just to the east is Mount Elbert, Colorado's highest 14, or at 14,439 feet. This is massive geology. We can see for miles, humbled by the scale of these mountains. There's snow on the way down to Lost Man Lake, the remnants from a freak early winter storm a few weeks before. Colorado had an unprecedented 60-degree temperature swing from the heat of summer to snow. We slip and slide a bit on the mushy snow on the trail. I make a snowball and throw it. At the lake, we take basic lunch, apples, PBJ, carrots, and granola bars. For the next 2 hours, we're on a steady decline. The Lost Man Loop Trail meanders, following the valley floor. We pass willows thirsting on streams. The wind whips through the valley. We traverse hillsides, rounding our way downstream. It's a massive and enchanted valley, completely devoid of human civilization. This is a cathedral. We're breathing in the splendor of the mountains. We're struck by the patterns in the carpet of grasses made by the streams. As we get lower, the ecosystem and its flora changes. We walk through evergreen forests. The stream is bigger now. My legs are tired. I'm stumbling a bit. A workout, a fulfilling trek, a bit unending. Then finally, there it is, the telltale reservoir that lets us know that we are getting back to civilization. A welcome parking area on a narrow road 10 miles up Independence Pass. 6 days later, and somewhat more acclimated, I hiked the Maroon Snowmass Trail to Snowmass Lake with my lifelong friend Robert Sardinsky, Sardo, as well as daughters Sierra and Skye. It's an 8.5-mile uphill trek from the trailhead in Old Snowmass through aspen groves shimmering in the morning light, open meadows, pine forests, traversing rock slides. After 5 hours, we make it. Snowmass Lake is picture postcard perfect. A broad expanse of clear, cold water shimmering, surrounded by 14ers, topped off with billowing clouds and fantastically clear blue skies above. We take lots of pictures and breathe in the grandeur and intense beauty of it all. The 17-mile round trip leaves us wobbly that evening, inspired and, yes, a bit beaten up.